I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boulay Kev Show, man. We got a special guest. As a Arizona native, it is an honor. One of my favorite Phoenix Suns of all time, and his jersey is going in the rafters, the Ring of Honor. Amari Stoudemire.
Yes, sir.
Welcome, brother.
What's up, my man?
Long time coming, man.
Yeah, we're here now.
I got to tell you, man, like, it just feels like ever since Matt Ishbia bought this team, he has done right by us fans and by, like, the era of Suns basketball that we all love so much.
Absolutely. I mean, he's great, bro. Like, since he came in, he started to this new wave of, like, excellence with the organization,
it's
right?
It's crazy.
It's awesome, man.
And it's so crazy because, like, you know, I feel like I pinch myself every time he does some cool shit. Like, we get a G League team now.
Right, exactly.
You know?
It's about, like, time, right? Yeah, for sure, bro.
The games are free on TV.
Right.
You know, it's crazy, man. You were such a staple in this community, not just on the court. You know, I think back to, like, going to Stoudemire's and having penny drinks and getting wasted. Stoudemire's was a staple downtown for so long.
Yeah, exactly.
I even think to when you had your record label and you had, like, Judge and, and Juice and those guys, like, and you were, like, doing your part to kind of, like, help put on, like, AZ Hip Hop. Like, all these years later, like, how connected are you still to Phoenix? Obviously, you know, you went to New York and had an amazing run there, but, like, Phoenix is kind of, like, where it all started for you.
Yeah, it is. This is where it all started, bro. And I think my time in Phoenix was great because I was able to put on for the city.
You right? were.
You know what I'm saying? Like you were saying, the record label, we was doing the, we was hosting, like, talent shows. And so local artists would get a chance to you know, broaden their platform. From that standpoint, from a fashion standpoint, I had fashion shows out here for All-Star Weekend and these things. I mean, it just Phoenix became a home to me. You know what I'm saying? So I embraced it. I even trained here in the summer times.
Like, and most people leave and go to L.A. or
everyone leave because it's summertime, it's hot, whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
I stay here and train because the facilities are great, and plus I want to be in top shape, and I felt comfortable in my own home training with my trainers.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It was a good fit for me.
It's crazy, man, because I think back to, like, the Suns heyday, the 7 seconds or less era of Phoenix Suns basketball, and, you know, a lot of highs, a lot of heartbreak. Western Conference semifinals, 07. You and Boris jump off the bench to defend Steve Nash.
Yep.
I made it on TNT because at the time, they called me Bootleg Kev for a reason because back then I used to bootleg everything. Mixtapes, I used to sell mixtapes like Nicki Nice and all the stores around town.
Right.
But I had Fuck Robert Horry t-shirts that I made.
Yeah, I remember those.
And I sold, that was me. And I sold them on the corner in front of the arena and Craig Sager.
I remember that.
Had one on TV.
That's right.
And so that was like, man, it felt like that year was like our year. It was like,
yeah, man, that was a crazy moment, bro, because no one knew about this rule, you can't step on the court, right? No one heard of that. The coaching staff didn't know. If they would have known, they would have held us back, or we would have just not have stepped on the court. You know what I'm saying? So, and I was always pretty upset about that time, too, because it's like, what kind of rule is, what kind of punishment is that to suspend someone for a playoff game without a warning? You know what I'm saying? But the following game, I came back game six. So what I did was that game, I spent at Stoudemire's downtown.
Mm.
So I had all my friends.
So you watched it there because you couldn't even be in the building, right?
Right. So I was across the street from the arena, and I went to the restaurant, the big screen TV, and we sat and ate food and watched the game. And then game six, I came back with 38-16. You know what I'm saying? But by that time, they had the momentum.
Mm-hmm. They did, man.
You know.
It's crazy. I recently, you know, as a fan, like, we carry sports fan hate with us. And when Kobe passed away, it like hit me real hard. I used to hate Kobe when he was alive as a player, you know, because I'm a Suns fan.
Kobe was a Suns dagger, bro.
Exactly, right? But, you know, when he died, like, I cried, you know? Sure. And I was like, it made me, like, let go of, like, you know, some of the toxicity we have as sports fans. With that being said, I'm not sure how much I've let go of the Spurs hate that I have.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, Spurs, I have less love for the Spurs.
Oh, right? My gosh. I want to like Wemby, but he's got that jersey on.
Yeah, for sure.
I just think all the heartbreak, man, like, it's crazy. Like, what was it like for you? Because, you know, when we think of D'Antoni, like, he wasn't high on defense, but, like, you had to be the guy to, like, guard Duncan a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was the hardest part about he didn't show much emotion. I mean, no. I remember he hit a three against us in one of those playoff series.
And he showed the emotion then.
And I was
that,
just like,
that's the most emotion you might have seen
when
from
he hit that three?
His whole entire career. It's crazy.
Nonetheless, I think, like, you know, he somehow gets, when we talk about the GOATs, he kind of slips through those conversations when he should be. I mean, he's the greatest power forward of all time, like five rings, go on and on. But what was the hardest part about competing against Tim Duncan in those high-intensity series and games?
Well, I mean, the problem was is that the Spurs were always well-coached and well-organized, right? So, and with Tim, he was a player who played off angles.
Mm.
So wherever he is on the court, he figured out a way to get a basket or a rebound. And it's not like a loud 30 points, right? It's a few free throws here, it's a jump shot here, a couple layups.
He's like, works the angles of the game.
You got 30 points and 15 rebounds?
Yeah.
Like, I'm dunking the ball all night.
And you don't even...
My points are loud.
Right, his are like, wait,
but
he's
then
got
you look
30?
At the stat sheet at the end of the game, it's like, well, he got 35 and 15.
Yes.
You know, but that's just how he played. He played silently and got his job done.
You got to play with Steve. I consider you to be a top three or four son of all time. I put you in that conversation. Obviously, shout out to Walter Davis. Shout out to Steve Nash. You know, I put Barkley a little lower because he only played a few years for us. But I think Devin Booker has taken the reins as the he might be up. He might be the GOAT of the Suns all time. For you, I know he had said recently, yesterday, he actually said that when he was going through a lot of the losing his rookie season, you had kind of reached out to him. But, like, what's it like to just see a guy like Book, you know, kind of carry the torch from what you guys built? Because there was the dark ages. And now it's like, all right, well, we're relevant again. What's your guys' relationship like? And, you know, where would you put Book in terms of, like, the all-time Suns greats?
Yeah, I think Book still have a long ways to go, right? He's really just getting started, man. He's only in his mid-20s.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And what he's accomplished already is incredible. So he's definitely in those top conversations for sure. And so, yeah, there was some times where when I played here, we had our run, and then there was like you said, a dark moment, and then they draft the Book, and then they start to kind of revamp. And now they're doing great, right, with KD and these guys. But Devin is definitely at the top of the list when it comes to all-time Suns. And the way he plays the game, we was at the game last night, the way he plays the game is, like, fundamentally sound. He's always
and he's
on
just
balance.
Got that, he's got that killer instinct, man.
Like, he goes for it, you know what I'm saying? And that's what you want from a coaching standpoint or just a spectator standpoint. You want to see your player go for it, you know what I mean?
For sure. For you, man, 2010, you end up, end of the 2010 season, right? Going into 2011, there's the giant, the most memorable offseason probably in basketball history because you're a free agent, LeBron's a free agent, Chris Bosh is a free agent. You end up with the Knicks. You have an MVP caliber season your first year there before the injuries happen. What was, tell me like what your mind state was, because it would have been nice to have kept you. It would have been nice to have kept a few people on the Suns. We'll get to that. but what was like your mind state year one in New York? You know, like, because you were playing with a chip on your shoulder that first year, it was crazy. I think you had a bunch of MVP votes. Like I think you guys were like a little over 500, but you were balling. Like what was that first year with New York like?
I mean, it was incredible, bro. It's like New York was a place I always wanted to play in, right? Like, everyone wants to play in Madison Square Garden. And to be a Knick and to play in New York and for me to be able to just show my entire skill set. Right, so I was able
to.
You're
still with Mike D'Antoni too. He was coaching that year. So
I was with Mike D'Antoni was still coaching there, and so now I'm able to really show my whole package, my game. You know what I'm saying? So when I did that, it's like the league wasn't ready for all of what I had in store. So I took the league by storm. Crazy MVP chance. I was leading candidate for MVP halfway through the season, and the city was on fire. Right, every restaurant I go to, everything's free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything was like. New York was on fire, bro. So it was a beautiful time in New York that year.
Well, can you give me a little window on what it was like to be around for the Linsanity season? Because I think were you hurt when all that was happening?
Nah, my brother had passed away.
Okay.
And I had went to Florida for like I think a week or so.
And then it happened while you were gone.
While I was gone. So, but I came back and caught it. So what happened was a few players were hurt.
Melo was out, right?
Melo was hurt.
You were gone.
I was gone, and there was a few other players that were hurt. So Jeremy Lin was like the 15th man on the roster, whatever, 12th man on the roster.
Right.
And so he got a call to say, we need you to play. We need you to start. You got to step up for us. And he stepped up and had 30 points game one. All right, you know, 30 points.
Anybody can get 30 on any given night.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Then he comes back with another 30. Like, well, all right, well. And I'm in Florida watching the games. I'm like, dang, Jeremy Lin going off. And then he played the Lakers. Had 38 on Kobe. I'm like, wait, hold on. Something ain't right.
What's going on?
And then I get back to New York, and the city's crazy. It's upside down. I mean, everybody's everywhere cheering, chanting. The crowd was crazy in the streets. Every single restaurant, everywhere was like.
It was a movement.
It was a movie.
It was all that was on TV.
It was crazy, bro. And it lasted for a good 2 weeks. It was fun.
It was like 2 weeks, yeah. Well, then, like, because, like, Melo came back, and I feel like, I think he's talked about it, like, but, like, there was, like, weird energy there. But, like, Jeremy Lin Saturday was a moment.
So yeah. I was back also. We played a game against Toronto, and it was down to the last, you know, a few seconds. And I'm like, all right, it's my time to hit the game winner. Jeremy Lin kind of moves everybody out the way. I'm like, oh, okay, all right, Jerry. All right.
I got this.
He said, I got this.
Did he hit it?
And pulled up for the three, won the game.
Wow.
So we were like, all right, I'm gonna let him shine. I'm gonna let him be who he is and have fun. But it all changed. Melo came back, then it kind of got a little shaky because Jeremy Lin wasn't playing much, and the ball wasn't going to him as much, so it kind of dropped there. But it was a good run for him.
You've played with a lot of amazing players. I mean, obviously, even throughout the later years of your career, when you were on certain rosters, like back-to-back MVP Steve Nash, Melo, who in your opinion would be the best player you played with or just your best teammate you had?
Man, I had a lot of cool teammates, bro. I had a lot of fun, right? I was always inviting my teammates out to dinner, to gatherings, to wine tasting.
Yeah, you did have a nightclub.
You know what I'm saying? I was inviting all my guys out to hang out because I think the best thing about it is to build team camaraderie.
For sure.
Because I'm on the court, I'm the leader of the team, and I'm telling my guys, you got to do this, you got to do that. It's like after, you know, demanding so much, they're going to be like, man, I can't take this. But if we go out, we have a good time, you see it's all coming from a good place. And now when I demand my teammates to do something, it's not reprimanding. They know
are friends.
Right,
first,
they're my guys.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I think for us in Phoenix, the team we had with Nash, Sean, Joe Johnson.
Oh, we're going to get to that team, but yeah, continue.
But I'm saying those guys will come out and we'll hang out. Like Nash would come out and hang out in the clubs with us.
Who would have thought?
You know what I'm saying? Right. Oh, Nash was in there, right? Yeah. he with the guys.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so that team camaraderie helped. So I would say Steve Nash was probably my favorite teammate that I played with, not only as an unselfish player, and he played with a certain type of passion for the game, but I enjoyed playing with Steve.
Your guys' two-man game, the lob, man, listen, and I feel like somehow Nash was like a decade before his time. Because I think about like the three-point era of the game and how good Nash is as a shooter, like how much he might have averaged if the game was, you know, the way it is
now.
Yeah,
you shoot more threes now. I mean, we led the league in three-point shooting, I think shooting, what, 12 threes a game?
Yep. And
now,
what
now
is
you
that
got
now?
Players shooting
that would probably be
again.
Last place in the league. Yeah.
And we led the league in 3-point percent shooting and percentages during that stretch. So we started this whole wave of now 3-point shooters, right? We started the whole thing.
For sure. Is there something about the 7 seconds or less thing that you feel like gets a bad rep? Because, you know, we always hear D'Antoni wasn't – like he didn't coach a lot of defense, right?
Yeah.
Like – And I mean, I've talked to other players who've said that, like Baron Davis.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
But it obviously works to the point where the Suns were the number one seed, the number two seed, like very, like, it. You know, caught a couple of tough breaks in the playoffs. But, like, you know, I feel like that brand of basketball, somehow, like, when you talk to basketball nerds, they're like, yeah, but you'll never win a ring with that. But,
I mean, the thing is, we could have won a ring for sure. Right? We had a couple breaks.
Shitty owner.
Yeah, we had a couple breaks, a couple bad releases, right? Certain players, we could have signed Joe for like 50-something million.
Oh, I was like, yeah.
And then he went to go sign for 100-something million and become a six-time All-Star.
Crazy.
Like, we could have had him on our squad for a long time.
Crazy. Oh, heartbreak.
The 2010 team, eight or nine team, we lost against the Lakers in the Western Finals.
That was 2010. Robin Lopez was starting center.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I had him playing well. He was playing alongside
of
me.
Yes, he was. Yeah, and then Ron Artest decided he wanted to start making threes.
Right, and then we go and not bring me back to for the following year, and we were right there at the Western Finals. So we had chances to win with that style.
Right.
But
oh, well, that was Gentry though.
That was Gentry.
That was Gentry. Alvin Gentry who
Gentry
was the coach.
Had more of a defensive mind.
I was
going to
say like that season. Somehow we forget about it, but that was the closest you guys got to the finals, and Marion was not on that team.
Yeah, it's true.
That was a very underrated Grant Hill season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Robin Lopez, underrated season from the big
Channing
guy.
Yeah, Channing Frye stepped up big for
Channing
us.
Channing Frye, Jay Rich.
Stretch four, stretch five, which is now the game.
And we were so close, and the Lakers ripped our hearts out. But, like, that season, your final season, like, it would have been crazy to get a ring, man. Like, it was right there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, going against Kobe, though, that was – because, you know –
Kobe wasn't an easy guy to go against, bro. You can't stop Kobe.
I think back to the times, though, where we bounced them out as the 8 seed.
Yeah.
After Shaq left.
Right.
Anytime I get into arguments with Laker fans, with the
we beat the Lakers. We got Kobe out of there.
In the first round. For sure.
You know what I'm saying?
I always bring that up because I always will do the LeBron or Jordan versus Kobe because, you know, I live in L.A., so them L.A. fans, they don't want to hear anything. And I'm like, well, when Kobe was just Kobe and there was no other guys, 8 seed – and we got him up out of there
two years straight. 2 years straight. Suns over the Lakers.
Talk to me about that seat. So, listen, the what ifs, right? You brought up Joe Johnson, which is one of the more heartbreaking free agency departures because we think about what could have been, right? Like, I remember being at those games with Joe. I remember being at that Clippers game where Tim Thomas hit that three in the corner against the Clippers in the playoffs when the Clippers had, like, Sam Cassell.
Yeah, I remember that.
When, as a player, what's the morale like when the Joe Johnson thing happens and you're like, this is easy, I mean, it has to kind of mess with you a little bit where you're like,
yeah, I mean, Joe's my guy. Like, we both.
It's such an obvious basketball move to make.
Yeah, you would think so. Joe was there my rookie year, right? So we was like around the same age. And so we had great, you know, camaraderie as young players that's going to grow in this league.
Right.
We figured we'll be, you know, on the same squad for some time and keep growing and keep getting better. And we had a solid playoff run.
Solid.
You know, when we had Q Rich and those guys, we went to the Western Finals.
Yep.
And so when Joe leaves, I'm like, all right, well, that's just a bad move. He didn't really ask for a lot, and he wanted to stay. And as a player, I'm like, 2 years in, I can't really say much and try to demand anything at that moment. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I don't know how this whole thing works. So – it was tough when Joe left, but we had to keep pushing. And I think they knew, like, they had Stoudemire and then Nash, which is the cornerstone guys.
And Marion.
And Sean. So whatever players you bring around them, it's going to be successful regardless. So I think that was the mindset also with the ownership.
I was going to say, was there, like, I feel like back then it wasn't as publicized because we were winning so much. The Sarver thing, you know? I feel like later on, during the dark years, I call them, like, people were like, sell the team. Hashtag sell the team.
Yeah.
Did you guys realize, like, the ownership for the Suns at that point in time is a little bit different than some of the more marquee franchises in the league?
Yeah, it was getting crazy, bro. I mean, I came into the Suns when we had Jerry Colangelo. who was an awesome owner.
For sure. And then some might say the GOAT.
He's the GOAT, bro. And then Brian Colangelo was our GM. Yep. And he would bring players in. It was signed players. And it wasn't like a stingy type of organization. Like, the best players want to come here. We're going to pay you to come, and we're going to play to win.
Right.
That kind of shifted when Sarver came. It was like more so trying to reconstruct deals. Joe's gone, not re-signing Stoudemire. Like, it was a whole thing that took place, which wasn't the same energy as it was with Mr. Colangelo. But long story short, we still had our core guys who still had success.
For sure. Did Ishbia and the Suns leave it up to you whether you wanted to retire 1 or 32?
Well, I've always put it out there that I wanted to retire 32, even before Matt Ishbia came on.
Well, because Book's won, so it's like at that point, it's like
even before Book came on the team.
Right. So, because 32, I feel like you, man, both sides, both jerseys, you had. I mean,
yeah, 32
is where it started. Like, when I buy a retro, I'm buying the retro 32. You know,
that's where it started. And the thing about the 32 jersey is, there's only one player that will ever see or know in today's game, in the game of basketball, that have ever been the first to get rookie of the year out of high school. You would never see that again. There would never be another first. So that 32 jersey represents that. Out of all the high school players that came out into the NBA, the first person to do it was that 32 jersey in Phoenix. You know what I'm saying? And that's a trivia question on board games, like these games you play.
Because most people will say LeBron, but it was you.
Right.
Yeah. It's so crazy, man. I remember when we drafted you and Marion within, what was that, like a 3-year window or whatever it was? It felt like, and we got Nash. It just felt like tides were turning. They were turning, man. Like, it's crazy, too, because I feel like you were probably one of the best in-game dunkers of all time. You obviously did the dunk contest at 1 year, I think, right?
Twice.
This last dunk contest was rough.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't worth watching.
It was rough. Like, do you think they could ever fix the dunk contest again?
Yeah, you can. You got to get guys who can dunk in the game. Like, you got Zion, you have Jalen Green, you have, you know, Ja Morant.
Oh, yeah.
You get these guys in the dunk contest. When I was coming up, we got in the dunk contest. That's the thing. Like,
Kobe did the dunk contest.
You want to be great.
You did the dunk contest.
You want to be great, you go in the dunk contest.
I also think there's something to say about the judges changing every year. Because some of these judges that they're like, hey, this guy played for the Pacers in 1984. And, you know, I was watching, like, I just don't know how Jaylen Brown made it to the finals. God bless Jaylen Brown. He's an amazing guy. And
I don't understand the D Brown.
He hit it at the end on the floor.
You're on the ground, and then you go, is that a dab or is that a D Brown? Which one is it?
it was crazy, man.
It was crazy.
For me, man, I just want to say, like, you are part of the best memories of a Suns fan. Up until recently, we did go to the finals recently, but like my childhood,
yeah,
it's Stat, it's Marion, it's Steve Nash, those back to back MVPs, right?
Yeah.
A lot of guys like to look back at those, specifically Shaq for the second one. Do you feel like Nash deserved that second MVP over Shaquille O'Neal?
I think what happened was because that second year I was injured. And Nash still was able to propel the team to a 60-win season or 58-win season.
Without his number one guy.
Without his main, without the leading scorer,
yeah.
Leading rebounder.
Leader, yeah, everything. Yeah, you were our guy. You were like.
You know what I'm saying? And so for him to still manage that and still have, you know, I think it was the best record in the NBA at the time, that is a lot to be said. And so I think that's why he was able to win that MVP, that second one, because he was able to, like, withstand his number one guy out and still being the top team in the league.
Who was the most annoying player to play against that you would have to either guard or who guarded you?
The most annoying player?
Yeah, just somebody who you're just like, God damn it, this guy's going to guard me all day. Like,
I mean, I didn't like guarding Elton Brand.
Elton Brand. He's very slept on, dude.
People forget about Elton Brand.
Hey, when he was with Philly in the Clippers,
he
was nice.
What he does is when you go for the rebound, he goes out of bounds.
Which you're not supposed to do, right?
And then your ball goes up, and he comes back and just duck you in. Like, that's just it was so aggravating to me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he always get the inside position and get the offensive rebound and score. I'm like, hold on, man. I can't watch him out of bounds and watch the ball. So that was tough. And also Kevin Garnett, he was always like, he couldn't stop me, but he liked to grab and hold. And it's like he's a defensive prowess.
One of the greatest, yeah.
So it's like you got to bring your A game, but yet he gets away with a few holes and grabs because his mentality, you know what I'm saying? So which is always good to play against.
Last thing I wanted to ask, man, just like tell me, like, you know, for the people of Arizona, for the people of Phoenix who are watching this, obviously all the basketball fans are watching this, just like, you know, this is a big deal. Being a part of the Ring of Honor, some of the names that are up there with you, way overdue. You know, what is your message to the Suns fans?
Well, I think my message is more so is, you know, the appreciation that the fans have for me. And they've watched me grow from a teenager all the way through my 20s, right? And to be able to now, you know, be inducted into the Ring of Honor with a jersey retirement, they've been with me from the start, you know. And so seeing the growth, seeing the determination, the will to persevere through injury, to be in top shape, to try to contend for a championship, the heart that I put in the basketball court, the way I played and the passion I played with, the fans appreciate that. You know, and I want to let them know I appreciate them for their appreciation. You know what I'm saying?
Would you ever coach?
I coached 2 years for player development with the Nets.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep. When Nash was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. But it's something that could happen, but right now I'm not looking forward to it.
You think Nash got a rough deal over there in Brooklyn?
It was a rough deal. He did the best he could, which I thought he did a pretty good job.
Me too.
It was a rough stretch.
Well, listen, man, I appreciate you. Appreciate your time. And thank you for the memories, man.
Yes, sir.
I'm Ari Stoudemire, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's go. 32.
Boom.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast.
Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.